This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn and Xiaoning. Now, it's 7:45 in the morning, Friday the 7th of February, and we've been running a poll on the BFM Twitter account, that's at BFM Radio, asking you for your thoughts on what's the most effective way to deter fake news. So the options right now are fines and imprisonment, community service, media literacy education, or something else. Do let us know what you think. We've had about 70 votes, so far, and media literacy education and fines and imprisonment are tied for first place. Because we're asking this against the backdrop of the fact that the Wuhan coronavirus has continued to spread. And alongside that, so has misinformation or fake news about the virus. Now, the Malaysian government has vowed serious action against individuals perpetuating misinformation and have taken legal action in some cases. One prominent case that's making the rounds involves the National Union of Journalists Exco member Wan Nurhayati Wan Alias.
Now, she's claimed trial to three charges concerning several posts on her personal Facebook account, Ibu Yati, about the virus. The journalist was charged under Section 505B of the Penal Code for knowingly publishing and circulating rumours likely to cause fear or alarm to the public. The NUJ has appealed to the government to drop its charges, arguing that she had the freedom of speech to raise concerns about this.
So to talk to us more about this, we have on the line with us Farah Marshita Abdul Patah, Vice President of the National Union of Journalists. Thank you for joining us, Farah. So explain it to us a little bit. Why is the NUJ defending Wan Nurhayati in this case?
Okay, hi. Thank you for having me. Okay, we don't agree with Wan Nurhayati's comment, but every person cheated is also deemed equal in the eyes of the law. And Wan Nurhayati has the natural right to pursue her case and what she believes in court. That's what we are supporting. And at the end of the day, Wan Nurhayati is our member. Our concern is mainly for her safety and not to be detained in jail for not being able to afford the money. So that's where our support comes in, for her to not be in jail for not having to have bail money. And also because we believe that she has the right to fight what she believes in court. That's what we're supporting.
Now, wouldn't the charging of these individuals, however, still serve as an app warning for anyone who spreads misinformation?
Yes, it would still serve as a warning to anyone who, spread misinformation. We agree that if it's wrong, we understand that, we have to follow the law. But as a member of our NUJM, we will do whatever best that we can do to support her.
So, Farah, what do you think of the current legislation surrounding this then? Are current laws sufficiently robust to address the growing issue of fake news, particularly in this age of fear over the spread of the coronavirus?
In all honesty, I feel that our current law are more than sufficient. In fact, we don't need anti-fake news acts. Because in this country, there's law for everything, even for fake news. And in the case of Wan Nurhayati, remember that she's not charged under fake news, but instead she's charged under penal code.
All right, and thank you very much for speaking to us this morning, Farah. That was Farah Marshita Abdul Patah, Vice President of the National Union of Journalists. Now, for a different perspective, we also have on the line with us Sharizan Johan, a lawyer and political secretary to Lim Kit Siang. Thank you for joining us, Sharizan. Now, you've called the NUJ a defense of Wan Nurhayati misguided. So, having heard what Farah had to say, have you changed your view?
Well, I think when I said misguided, it's only in respect to the NUJ saying that, making this into a press freedom issue, because I disagree that it is a press freedom issue. But in terms of supporting the journalists, in terms of giving her, ensuring that she has legal representation and so on and so forth, I have no issue with that. In fact, I agree with that. Every person charged needs to have legal representation. And in this case, she should certainly be allowed bail. So there is no issue on that. The only issue is that when they have raised that this is a press freedom issue, that's where I say that that sort of support is misguided.
But how would you then respond to arguments that prosecuting a journalist would be a stepping stone to muzzling the media?
I think we must remember that this person, now we don't want to delve into the merits of the case, whether she's guilty or not, but if we take it as it is, this person has supposedly posted messages on her personal Facebook account, and it has absolutely nothing to do with her profession as a journalist. In fact, the charges are irrelevant to what she does as a journalist. So to say that this is a press freedom issue, I think that's misconceived, because it is not right. It's not that the fact that she's a journalist is incidental, or it's irrelevant to the charges.
And can we tap your legal expertise also? Because the AG has said that they will use the Penal Code to tackle fake news. Now, what's the difference between the Penal Code and the Communications Act's provisions?
Well, I think when you talk about the Communications Act provision, in my view, is actually the threshold is actually lower. Because when you talk about Section 233 of the Communications and Multimedia Act, the offence is essentially posting something which is offensive or false with intent to annoy. So it's a very low threshold. And this is why the section has been criticized by a lot of people, that it basically criminalizes annoying people. It criminalizes these sort of things. But what the AG has done is not charge people under Section 233. Instead, charged under Section 505B. Now, Section 505B deals with those who make statements with intent to cause fear. There's actually no element of falsehood or fake news or anything of that sort in Section 505B. The important element there is that it is either with intent to cause fear or alarm, or it is likely to cause fear and alarm. So the whole offence is premised not on whether it is false or fake news, but on this element of causing fear or alarm. So that is the main difference. So in that sense, what the AG is saying, that we're not at this point in time saying that, oh, you've spread fake news, we're going to charge you. It's that if you spread statements, in this case, they would say it's false statements, but it's not an important ingredient. But if you spread statements which are with intent to cause fear or alarm, then we'll go after you.
But how do you determine that intent then, particularly when we're talking about the viral nature of this kind of news? Because sharing a piece of information that you read is a click away. So how do you determine, how do you differentiate and distinguish these 13 cases that are being charged for for making statements with intent to cause fear versus the other people who would have clicked the share button because they themselves felt affected by the news?
I think here the difference is that the intent must be there. So when you spread these things, it must be clearly for reasons to cause this fear. And I think you can certainly differentiate between a person who does it quote unquote innocently, or just sharing, and someone who's actually doing it with these intentions or with knowing that there is this likelihood. For example, I think if someone posts up something, you must look at the language, you must look at the response, perhaps. If in that context there's people telling them that this is wrong, but they just leave it, then perhaps that would go towards showing that you have an intention to cause fear or alarm. Whereas if you are innocently asking, or if you don't have any sort of intention, the language will be different. You'll be very quick to amend your post or remove your post and things like that.
So in your view, are the current laws sufficiently robust to address the growing issue of this fake news to begin with?
The laws, yes, certainly. And that's the reason why people have criticized the Anti-Fake News Act, because apart from the fact that it allows the state to determine what is true and false, there's also sufficient laws to deal with fake news. We must remember, just because something is fake doesn't mean that the state needs to step in. I think there must be an extra element of, you know, a threat to public order, threat to national security, public health, and so on and so forth. We can't just say that, oh, because it's fake, then we need to take action. There must be that added element to justify the state stepping in. So in this case, it is a public order issue because they are saying that, you know, it will cause panic and fear. In other instances, perhaps if there are situations where rumors are being spilled or spread, or statements are being spread which could lead to racial violence, then perhaps the state can step in. But if you just spread fake news per se, I think you must somehow justify why you want to restrict or you want to take action against something like that.
However, isn't this the possibility of it being used to, let's say, silence critics of, let's say, the government for a certain issue?
Section 505 is very difficult for you to use that against critics because of the fact that the specific nature of the offence. The Anti-Fake News Act, yes, certainly. In fact, Section 2331 has been abused by the previous government to silence dissidents. And that's why people have also criticised Section 233 of the Communications and Multimedia Act. Remember I said that the threshold was lower. So it allowed people to actually take action against those who drew caricatures of Najib or those who, you know, criticized other leaders and so on and so forth. So that has happened before. And it could happen before, again, if the government, the current government doesn't do something to amend. We have an AG who believes in free speech. So that's why he decided not to charge people, I suppose, under Section 2331. But, you know, that you cannot have laws which, you know, depend on, you know, whether your AG is benign or not.
Well, thank you very much for speaking to us this morning, Sharizan. That was Sharizan Johan, political secretary to Lim Kit Siang and constitutional lawyer. constitutional lawyer. Now, it's an interesting sort of conundrum because a lot of the conversation about this address, particularly of Wan Nurhayati, has centered around her occupation. But the fact of the matter is, you know, as both Sharizan and Farah pointed out, she was acting on her own steam and making comments in her personal capacity, not as a journalist, not as a member of an official media outlet, not on an official media platform.
No, it was on her Facebook, I believe.
It was on her Facebook account. So there is some concern that, you know, that there is, as Sharizan said, that her profession should be just incidental to the case and not be such a big focus. It shouldn't be a press freedom issue, essentially.
No, but I think the conversation was interesting in that, yes, we seem to have sufficient robust laws, but it requires actually some further amendment, right?
I think what
because
I took
the
from
last
that...
point was that, okay, lucky, good news. We have an AG that believes in the freedom of speech and has dropped certain charges. But if it was a different AG, a different government, there remains the potential of this Communication Act to be abused.
Exactly. So in other words, our laws are maybe too robust for our own good. And therefore, it's really up to the people involved to offer clemency, which
after
doesn't
all,
make sense.
After all, the threshold for the Communications Act 2331 is annoyance. Now, what's annoying to me may not be annoying to you. And who decides? It seems like a very subjective test.
Absolutely. And I think this this kind of low threshold for court action has been one of the factors contributing to how reluctant we are as Malaysians to engage in political debate and discourse. Because it's very easy to say that, oh, you know, I don't agree with you, Shaoning, you are causing me annoyance.
Or I draw a cartoon of you that you don't like.
Yeah, something
so
like that.
So is that annoying? I mean,
it might be annoying, but is it enough for court action? Apparently, so this is where action really does need to be taken as soon as possible. Because it's fortunate that the government has come in and has made a commitment to free speech, but a commitment only lasts so long, right? And then you don't know what's going to happen at the next general election. You don't know who your next cabinet or your next leader is going to be. So unless these principles are enshrined in our laws and there is the possibility that we could see a return to the days when laws like Section 2331 and 505B were used against the people. So this is one of the things that we are going to be watching very closely indeed, particularly as the Wuhan coronavirus appears to be continuing on. There is no end to the situation just yet. But right now we are about to head into the 8 o'clock news. And then after that, we'll be having the Breakfast Grill, where Khoo Soo Chuang speaks with Datuk Jared Lim, Executive Director of Sino-Hua-An International Berhad. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.